People of Earth, your planet has to be destroyed.
Welcome to Conspiracy, the show, the world's most trusted conspiracy theory podcast, with your hosts, Adam Todd Brown and Olivia Haidar.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Conspiracy, the show. I'm your host, Adam Todd Brown. Joining me as guests this week, plural, for starters, John Lewis is here. John, how's it going?
All right. You don't even like conspiracy. Wait, that's not the tagline.
It is, because you two are the only ones who ever volunteer to do this show. Kim Kroll's here also.
Hi, we are?
Yeah, people are really reluctant to do this show because the word conspiracy has so much stink on it. I think people assume I'm coming on here and plotting insurrections and things of the like when...
I mean, that's why I volunteer, because I thought that's what we were... Wait, that's not what we're doing today?
You should have gotten the email. We planned the insurrection. We're just on to other stuff now.
Oh.
Yeah.
I need to keep up on that.
The other tagline for this show could be stories that minorities thought everyone... believed already. I listened to the show like, yeah, well, I thought everybody believed all that shit.
People already knew about this.
Yeah.
I was thinking today while I was reading about today's subject, I was like, do you think maybe Adam would do a fun conspiracy? Just one where it's a bunch of yucks, like the Avril Lavigne one, just as a palate cleanser.
Yeah. Tell me you don't listen to the podcast without telling me you don't listen to the podcast. I've actually done the Avril Lavigne conspiracy. I've covered a bunch of fun stuff. It's not, I've been doing this podcast since 2017-ish.
I don't know what year it is. Oh, so, that's a while.
Yeah. We're closing in on 300 episodes. It's not all sad things. It's just, we're talking about Ronald Reagan this month, and Ronald Reagan sucks and he ruined the world. And nothing he did was happy, except when he died, obviously. But beyond that, he didn't do much good. So, I don't know. There are no fun Reagan conspiracies, you know?
No. I'll listen to the fun ones. Sorry to tell you that I haven't listened to all the episodes.
I mean, I was joking. I assume most people haven't listened to all my podcasts. It's fine.
It's like Huey Freeman from the Boondocks said, Ronald Wilson Reagan even got 6 letters in each 3 of his names. He's a devil.
Oh, shit, he does. Oh, so he is in hell right now. That's good. I like that.
Hopefully they got a super max hell.
Yeah.
Like it's different tiers or something, you know?
Yeah.
I want that.
I want there. What did you say that one time? It was so funny. Somebody called in. We're taking calls for, I think, the 500th episode. That's how you say it.
That's how you say that.
Yeah. 500. Mom's tired. Somebody said you don't believe in hell or something. Like, how can you say that you don't believe in hell, but you want Ronald Reagan? And you, without skipping a beat, you just said, I want there to be a hell so Ronald Reagan can be rotting in it.
Yeah.
And I think about that twice a week.
Ronald Reagan was the worst president we've ever had, Trump included. He's worse than any one-term president because he got 2 terms and got to do all sorts of damage. I also know it's weird to say it's Reagan month on Conspiracy the Show when it's the middle of the month. So I guess it's more like Reagan the next 4 weeks on Conspiracy the Show. Hell, maybe 6 weeks. There's a lot. And even then, we won't get through all of the havoc Ronald Reagan and the CIA wreaked on the world. We're going to talk about some of the big scandals like the Iran-Contra affair, the savings and loan scandal, which is a really underrated one. But also, we're going to talk about some lesser known stuff like what we're talking about today, which is the massacre at El Mazote. I had it written as the Mazote Massacre, but actually the name of the village is El Mazote. And if I write the El Mazote Massacre, that's going to look insane because that just means the Mazote.
Yeah.
This was a thing I had never heard of. And when you sometimes hear people say the United States created MS-13, which is the gang the government is the most scared of right now, this is the kind of shit they're talking about. This is exactly the kind of thing that we did in Latin America to cause people to flee to the United States. And with MS-13, we did shit like this. A bunch of people fled El Salvador, ended up in South Central Los Angeles, surrounded by street gangs. They create a gang of their own to protect themselves from these street gangs. Fast forward to 1992, Bill Clinton removes protection from those people who sought refuge in the United States, deports them back to El Salvador. They take MS-13 with them. And that's literally how that grew and flourished. Started here because we forced people out of El Salvador. And then once they became a criminal outfit of their own, we sent it back to El Salvador for them to deal with it. That's the thing that really bothers me about immigration. And when people take this hardline stance on immigration, I could maybe buy it if it wasn't us causing all the problems that make people want to flee to the United States. But it is. It's us. And so we have some responsibility to fix it in a way that doesn't end in millions of people dying.
Even down to the way America labels it, when it's people fleeing Ukraine, they're refugees. But when it's people fleeing Central America or Haiti or something like that, they're immigrants. They're all refugees. They're not just leaving their entire life because, you know, they want to go take a trip to America. Like most people would prefer to live in their culture where they live and stuff. Like, you know how bad it got to be to make a raft out of like sticks and empty bottles and stuff. And that's not a joke. They literally making rafts out of anything in some parts of the world to try and make it here.
Yeah.
And it's so crazy. Cuban immigrants, the way they look at other immigrants, y'all know that they flee the same reason that you flee. It's just crazy that the way America kind of turns people against each other and this classism and colorism and all of that stuff, like depending who gets to be a refugee, who gets to be an immigrant, and well, who did it the right way and who got grandfathered in and all that shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's terrifying because it's getting to a, it feels like a breaking point where, I mean, Trump keeps promising on day one, the largest deportation effort in history. I don't know if people are not paying attention when he says that, but his administration is promising to round up 10 to 13 million people.
Jesus Christ.
First day of his administration, they have used the words, send them to camps, which are already constructed on the border with Mexico, and then expel them from the country from there. So this, what we're talking about today, is kind of the genesis of what's happening today. And this shit happened in 1982. It's older than a lot of people I know.
Older than me.
Yeah.
It's as old as I am.
Yeah. And on top of being a really good example of how brutal the shit we did in Latin America in the 80s under Reagan was, it's also a great example of how much influence the government and the military exert on the media in this country.
Yeah.
We really like to pretend that we are just the freest place on earth and there are no limits on our freedom. We can do whatever we want. Oh, they kill journalists in Russia. Yeah. People got mad when Trump said we do here too, but we do here too. And there's a reason we're number 55 on the world Press Freedom Index, which is a list of the freest countries according
that's
to
wild.
The press.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not surprised, but that's wild.
And here's an interesting thing to note about that. In the past year, we've dropped 10 spots. So under Biden in the past year, we've dropped 10 spots on the Press Freedom Index.
I mean, yeah, that makes sense because, you know, I got a lot of YouTube friends and just between Cop City and trying to talk about Palestine, what's going on from an actual factual point, a lot of us, we just can't do it because you will straight up get your video flagged even if you're trying to just report point. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Report stuff. And it's so crazy that the media can decide what you're allowed to talk about, you know, from that point. It's just so it makes sense that America is dropping like that.
Yeah, and it's kind of an illusion how free we are here when it comes to the press. Because, yeah, you can write stuff. Like, you can write whatever you want. You can say whatever you want. But the government will retaliate if you say the wrong shit. And this is an example of it, what we're going to talk about today. But first, before we get into what happened at El Mazote, which is in El Salvador, for the record, happened in December 1981, we should talk about the School of the Americas, which
never heard of this.
This deserves a few episodes too. Maybe we'll cover this at some point. It's still in operation, for starters, but now it's called the Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation. Anytime the government has a building with that long of a name, evil shit's happening inside that building. Guaranteed.
Also, they went from like four syllables to 25. That couldn't make a more sinister sounding building.
And they still try to acronym it. So it's WISC, which that's dumb. That's stupid. Just call it School of the Americas. Sounds awesome.
Yeah.
That's what it should have been. Just keep the name if you're going to keep it.
Also sounds super sketchy and spy-like, but at least...
Oh, sure, sure.
It's not so long and sketchy, but School of Americas definitely sounds dangerous.
It is literally where the United States trains dictators and rebel groups that we then use to impose our will on Latin American countries. And if it seems like I'm exaggerating, please note they stopped teaching classes in English in 1956. They only teach classes in Spanish. This is a place that is purely meant to train people to go fuck up Latin American countries. It was located in the Panama Canal zone until the Panama Canal Treaty kicked it out. And that's when it moved to Fort Benning in, I think, 96, something like that. And a lot of what we did in Latin America in the 80s under Reagan starts with the School of Americas, including the massacre at El Mazote. Because the U.S. had a big stake in the Salvadoran Civil War, which lasted from 1979 to 1992. Brutal Civil War. As opposed to all those chill Civil Wars throughout history. Of course, it was brutal. This one lasted a long fucking time. And the ruling party were a right-wing military junta that was opposed to communism. And that is all you needed to be on our side in the 1980s during the Cold War, was just don't be on the side of Russia. But they had groups within the country that wanted to side with Russia and wanted to be a more communist-leaning regime. And instead of letting them fight that out at the ballot box, we, you know, sent the CIA in to fuck things up and destabilize the country. We did a lot of that.
Question, you lived through the Cold War. Did America ever explain what was supposed to be so bad about communism? Because the more I learned about it, I'm like, wait, so you mean workers having rights and stuff? Why are we supposed to not like this?
I think it's the workers having rights stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, America is owned by corporations. We are capitalist as fuck. The United States didn't want to fucking give people that kind of stuff. So we have to fight communism. And so, yeah, we backed this regime that was in charge. There's obviously more to the civil war in El Salvador, but we're not going to be able to get to all that. So at the School of Americas, the United States trained what would go on to become one of the most elite and feared counterinsurgency groups in El Salvador, called the Atlacatl Battalion. We're going to call them AB from now on. That name is a mouthful, and they don't deserve that much respect. You'll see. They were formed in 81 as El Salvador's, quote, first rapid response unit dedicated to fighting leftist guerrillas, end quote, according to a 1992 LA Times article about the battalion being disbanded. And their job in El Salvador was just to hunt for communists, find the communist sympathizers, find the guerrillas they were fighting, and take them out.
And also in the 80s, calling someone a communist or accusing someone of being a communist anywhere was...
I mean, these were communists. It's just whether they needed to be hunted and executed, or if you could just let the people vote on who they want to run the country. That's the question. And we usually didn't let people have that second option. We would just go and install whoever we wanted. And what's especially tragic about the attack on El Mazote is that the village had a reputation for being neutral in the Salvadoran Civil War. It was Catholics, apparently, who were mostly sympathetic to the communist side of things. Meanwhile, El Mazote was mostly evangelical Protestants who it seemed like just kind of wanted to stay out of it and let those two sides fight, to the point that the military had come through town before and they were, you know, just cordial. But they also knew, as far as the rebel groups go, they knew this was a place you couldn't really recruit members. They weren't interested in fighting, but they weren't going to fight you either.
And the attack, what purpose did it serve? Was it just to send a message or what? Because they didn't really accomplish anything by doing this attack.
That's the thing. It seems like just a war crime. It seems like they got there looking for one thing, realized it wasn't there, got mad, and decided they were going to have some fun. And by that, I mean literally murder the entire population of a village and burn it to the ground. One person survived who was actually there. A lot of people fled before it happened, but one person who was there survived, which that's terrifying.
I don't know how you even live any sort of normal life after that. I don't know how you even, you never are okay again. That's such a small way to put it. That changes your DNA.
American journalist Mark Danner, he wrote a book about this attack based on various witness accounts. It was called The Massacre at El Mazote. The timeline of events, according to that book, is as follows. And I don't know if warn is the right word, but I want to warn people that while this is going to be a little graphic, I'm skipping over a whole lot. This was a brutal, brutal attack on this village, and the details of it are the worst. It's the worst. So December 10th, 1981, units from this battalion arrive at El Mazote after fighting with guerrillas in a nearby village. This is El Mazote. It's a very small place. There's like 20 houses. There was a church. There was a smaller building behind it. There's a schoolhouse. And it seems like that's all that was there. And on that first day, soldiers order everyone out of their houses and into the town square, where everyone is searched and asked about insurgents in the area. They're told there's no one here, which was true. There apparently were people related to this insurgent group in El Mazote, but they fled. They knew this was happening. They knew the military was coming through. So they left, and there's a pretty harrowing quote later about that. But the military shows up. They take everyone out of the buildings, line them up, ask them all these questions, and then tell them, go back inside. If you come out, you're going to be killed. And that's the thing. If you read the account of the one survivor, one of the first things you'll read is she was like, we trusted the military. We were told as long as we stayed inside and didn't come out, we would be fine. And so no one saw this coming at all. So everyone stays inside. The next morning, soldiers come back out, take everyone back out, separate the men from the women and children, and interrogate, torture, and murder all the men by the end of the morning. So span of a few hours. At noon, they start rounding up the women and older girls, and I think everyone knows.
Yeah, they pillaged. Another term that goes with that.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that what pillage means? I've never looked into that. Pillage means rape?
No, I mean the term. Well, when they say rape and pillage, no, it's...
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
They go hand in hand together.
And
Jesus.
And then all the women and older girls were murdered. And then they kill the children in the most brutal way. They slit their throats and hang them from trees, which at that point, you're really not on any kind of fucking fact-finding mission. You're not looking for communists. You just are bloodthirsty fucking maniacs who like killing people. And
get to do it behind the guise of a military and the guise of a...
Not just behind the guise of a military, but a military that was trained by the most powerful country on earth. We financed and trained the people that did this. They came from the school of the Americas. This is that fucking drug commercial in the 80s where we're like, where did you learn this? And they're like, from you, all right? We learned it by watching you. That's this. We trained these motherfuckers. This is us, basically. It's not American troops, but they might as well be. They were trained by us. And they were fighting on our behalf.
Like we were saying earlier, it's basically what America what had just stopped doing not that long ago. This happened in the 80s, but pretty much well into the 70s, America was doing this shit like, hey, you all fighting for equal rights? All right, well, we'll just have to teach these uppity blacks a lesson. Just going from town to town, they would burn it down. And, you know, it's still people living that witnessed lynchings. And, you know what I'm saying, in some people's mind, lynchings is something that happened a long time ago, but they were still happening. Or just the history of America. One of the lecturer does the 90s, one of the YouTubers I follow, she was talking about just prom culture in America. Up until the late 90s, there were literally segregated proms. They wouldn't allow black and white proms to happen. So just going town to town, just killing people, it sounds like they didn't have any motive. But if they learned this from America, this is what America teaches. You see a group of people fighting for equality or something that you feel like they shouldn't have, you just go around killing. And you know that this stuff has been happening, and then that trauma is passed down.
The death toll ended up being around the estimate I think is 794 people that were killed in this attack. And this is one village. This is an operation that lasted from December 8th to the 21st. And they went to a bunch of villages, and the results were very similar. It's just that this one is where it was the worst. And again, we train them. That blood is on this country's hands. And so, as you'd expect, the Reagan administration wasn't in any hurry to let people know about this. So it took a while for people to find out about this, because it's 1982. There's no social media. There's no smartphones. You kind of have to rely on the media to tell you about stuff like this. And the New York Times had a reporter in El Salvador, a guy named Raymond Bonner, and he, on January 27th, 1982, wrote a story in the New York Times about what happened at El Mazote. And we'll link to what are basically the only two major media outlet articles about what happened. And his report, it's fucking harrowing. He talks about seeing charred skulls, piles of bodies. And he talked to the lone survivor, a woman named Rufina Amaya, who she managed to escape into the jungle when they were separating the men and women. She managed to get to the jungle and hid in a tree. Her husband, who was blind, was killed. And then her kids were killed. One of them was 8 months old. So they're killing babies.
How do you kill a baby? Like, how do you kill anybody? One, but how do you fucking kill a baby?
Yeah, I don't get it. Yeah, I don't know. I guess because the United States trained you to. Who knows? She said when the soldiers first showed up, they asked where the weapons were. And when they were told there were none, they just became irate. There had been communist sympathizers in the village before this, but they fled. And this is a quote from Carlos Martinez, who was 46 at the time. He's one of the people that fled before this. Quote, "We didn't think they would kill children, women, and old people, so they remained," end quote. And these monsters showed up and did exactly that. They didn't find who they thought they were going to find, so they were like, we got to kill someone, so they killed everybody else. So this was just a straight-up war crime. There was no benefit to the security of the United States. This didn't benefit anyone. This was just men and women and children who had nothing to do with this conflict, just murdered by people we trained.
Yeah, just sending a message that basically it's no neutrality. Either you against communism or you with it.
Yeah.
And if you're not against it, you're with it.
Yeah.
Right.
Jesus.
So this report comes out in the New York Times, and then a few days later, a Washington Post reporter named Alma Guillermo Prieto visited El Mazote and published a story in that paper. And we'll link to both of them. You can read the original articles. They are as horrifying as you'd expect. But what's also horrifying was the Reagan administration's response to it, and also the way the media immediately fell in line with the government's response. Because at this point, a lot of what Reagan was doing in Latin America was covert, but it wasn't a secret. It was known that we were involved in what was happening down there. So they weren't in any hurry for the story to get out. And when it did get out, the journalists who talked about it got ruined. This is a quote from Raymond Bonner. "That story was the beginning and end of my career at the New York Times." And the first attack comes from this conservative media watch group called Accuracy and Media, who claimed
probably just a branch of the government or CIA offshoot.
Absolutely. And they claimed that both of these reporters held their stories to coincide with a deadline Ronald Reagan was facing, where he had to prove the human rights situation in El Salvador was getting better in order to keep funding going for what they were doing in El Salvador. And imagine that being your criticism instead of, no, that didn't happen. It's like, oh yeah, well, we did that terrible thing, but you're just telling people because you want them to find out that Reagan did it. Yeah, of course, yes, that's why. Of course that's why. Anytime that's the defense, as opposed to, no, what you're saying is false, you can just assume that story's true, I would say.
Imagine learning this as Raymond Bonner. You write this article, you think, oh, I'm a reporter, so I'm going to report the news. The world needs to know. And then you find out, oh, you don't get to report the news. You get to report what you are told to report, or your life is ruined.
Right.
I don't feel like we're that much different today, you know,
no,
in terms of media.
Oh, no, definitely not. I mean, there's obviously things you can't report in the media now. I feel like you can kind of vet media outlets that way. Newsweek is the still only outlet that reported on the fact that the Department of Defense has been building a spy network in the United States that is now like 40,000 people who just go out into communities. They have fake social media profiles, fake names, and I guarantee you they are in LA comedy. If you're a fucking musician, they're there. If you're a fucking YouTube personality, you probably know someone who is one of them. There are more of them than there are undercover CIA agents. And they're operating in the United States, and one media outlet reported about it. How is that not the government influencing our media? If people are wondering why we're 55 on that list, that's why. That's obviously why. And it's because these outlets like the New York Times, the Washington Post, they lean on government access to do their job, which is kind of a backwards way to do it. Why would you go to the government and be like, is this story people are saying about you true? And then the government will say no. And they're like, well, we asked the government and they said no. And it's like, thanks. They're not going
to be
like,
yeah, we did do that. Like, yeah, of course.
Right. America had a whole thing called COINTELPRO. Yep. And I'm trying to remember, I'm assuming that wasn't official when it was happening, and people probably called you a conspiracy nut for talking about COINTELPRO. And then it came out like, no, they literally just send, you know, people out in the black neighborhoods and just spy. And that's their job.
Yeah. Yeah.
MK Wait, what Ultra. Is this?
You never heard of COINTELPRO?
No.
Oh, yeah. Back when the Black Panthers were at its height, I think it was reported pretty much like 50% of them had government ties. COINTELPRO was a counterintelligence program, and they were during the civil rights movements and to the mid 70s. If it was a group of people like, hey, we're organizing to feed hungry kids before school, the government would just go send them out to spy and stuff. And it was just so well known, they just basically infiltrated any leftist movement and, you know, made sure Fred Hampton got killed in his bedroom in a shootout, even though he never fired and stuff like that. They were spying on Muhammad Ali and stuff like any body that was so quote unquote radical.
The Fred Hampton thing, I didn't realize it's not just that he didn't shoot. An FBI informant drugged him. So he didn't even wake up when the police kicked his door in. So he obviously didn't fucking shoot. And the only question about whether the government had Fred Hampton assassinated is if they knew the police were going to shoot him. Everything else, the fucking United States government signed off on. The only thing we don't know is if they were like, also shoot him in bed. But if that wasn't the plan, why fucking drug him?
Yeah. And I know some people have issues with how many with historical inaccuracies, but the movie Judas and the Black Messiah was really good. If you all never seen that, with Lakeith Stanfield and my man from Get Out, two of my favorite actors out. So it was a really good movie.
Yeah, that was a really good movie. And so let's get back to the media and how they handled this story. I already mentioned accuracy in media basically said, well, yeah, it's true, but you just released it to hurt Ronald Reagan. It's like, you know, the hurting Ronald Reagan was just going to happen no matter what. I mean, it didn't do shit to hurt Ronald Reagan, but you get it.
People still worship that guy.
And then after that, representatives from the Reagan administration started claiming that either the attack never happened or that the accounts were exaggerated, which of course they did, because again, they did this. The Reagan administration, the U.S. government did this. We trained these people who went in and did this. This is us. So I'm not surprised they tried to cover it up. They also at various times claimed that what happened at El Mazote was a gunfight between two opposing groups. It was not. And shortly after the stories ran, Thomas Enders, then Assistant Secretary of State for Inter-American Affairs, said in front of a congressional committee that, quote, no evidence could be found to confirm that government forces systematically massacred civilians. So they did eventually start just straight up denying that this happened, probably because they knew proving it was going to be really, really difficult. Raymond Bonner described what he went through just to write that article. He had to wade through a river carrying his writing stuff above his head at one point. This is a crazy remote village. It was suggested that at one point, the people the government sent to confirm if this happened or not never even made it there. So they just came back and said it never happened because they couldn't even get to this village.
What the hell? They couldn't complete it. It did not finish. You're just going to say it didn't happen?
Yeah. Take a fucking helicopter. You're the government. The right. People that did this massacre had helicopters.
Yeah, get some Jeeps or some shit.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's pretty convenient, though. It's hard to get to, right. So we'll just say it didn't happen. Like,
yeah.
And also, once the guy whose job title I didn't even know existed until 5 minutes ago was like, yeah, it didn't happen. Like, what do you even do at that point? You know, it's an actual, that's the conspiracy. When people say conspiracy, that the conspiracy is not that it just happened. It's that people are complicit in covering it up.
Well, that's the thing. And we'll talk about another example of this in a minute. But once the Reagan administration starts denying this, all these other media outlets kind of rally around them and start questioning these two reporters' credentials, basically. The Wall Street Journal published a piece about media coverage of El Salvador and accused Bonner of being, quote, overly credulous, end quote, and accused the Washington Post of rallying behind a reporter out on a limb. And then Time Magazine weighed in shortly thereafter with a criticism of the reporting that, I'm not even joking, I'll read the quote in a second, but it boils down to, hey, just because women and children died, it doesn't mean they weren't communists too. This is Time fucking Magazine. This is a quote. And even more crucial, if common oversight, is the fact that women and children, generally presumed to be civilians, can be active participants in guerrilla war. New York Times correspondent Raymond Bonner underplayed that possibility. For example, in a much protested January 27th report of a massacre by the army in and around the village of Mazote, end quote. Kids got their throats slit. I don't care if they were.
And then they were hung afterwards.
I don't care if they were fighting with guerrillas. Like, you just take those kids back to some place and fucking deprogram them if you need to. You don't murder them. What the fuck? That's nuts.
I mean, we're watching this right now in real time, but we have social media that shows us what's happening in Gaza. Russia bombed a hospital in Ukraine a few days ago, and it's the same thing. It's white people, so it's refugees, and it's a tragedy, and it's so sad. But then when Israel did the same in Gaza, it was like just very different wording. There's no murder.
They worded it like it was just a spontaneous combustion. But when it was Russia, there was like Russia bombs a hospital.
Yeah. Killing innocent children. Yeah.
Yeah, and now there is no longer communism, it's Hamas. If this happened now, they would be like, oh, well, you know, that was a Hamas campsite. That's why it happened.
Yeah.
And a lot of the media is falling in line because this is a big ally of ours and Biden and every, you know, it's just, it's.
But
I can't imagine, sorry, back, you lost somebody in that village and you're devastated, right? You, the guy who was like, we left because we didn't think they'd kill children, women, and old people, and we left, and he survives. And then he has to also deal with the fact that now we're just going to say it never happened on top of the grief and the guilt. And then you have to also defend it for the rest of your life that this actually happened.
Yeah. What I find interesting here is we're talking about how, oh, well, there was no social media, so it took a while for people to find out. Yeah, so what if people did find out? What was that going to do? Because like you said, we have social media now. We see everything happening in Palestine. We see all kinds of shit happening. What changes? Remember all that justice reform that happened under Biden because we saw all those videos? No, there wasn't any. Would having social Nothing. Media back when this happened, it wouldn't have changed shit. So accuracy in media, they continued criticizing Raymond Bonner throughout the first half of 1982. In July of that year, they dedicate an entire report to him where they basically call him a communist agent and talk about how he worked for Ralph Nader and was at very least a communist sympathizer. Never mentioning that he was also in the Marine Corps in the Vietnam War. As this criticism keeps mounting, the New York Times eventually just recalls Raymond Bonner from El Salvador and basically fires him. I mean, he left the paper and quit, but it was because they pulled him off of this El Salvador job because they were buckling to right-wing pressure. It's not because his story was incorrect. It was just the right-wingers in the Reagan administration were mad about it. So the New York Times fired a guy over it, which the paper of record, ladies and gentlemen. So
Jesus.
The Times did deny that they pulled him for that reason, but whatever. The thing is, no matter why they pulled him, that sent a message to everyone else. I'll link to a Columbia Journalism Review article. They interviewed this reporter who said that the incident, quote, left us all aware that the embassy is quite capable of playing hardball. People treat it carefully. If they can kick out the Times correspondent, you've got to be careful. End quote. And that's how you crack down on the media. You don't kill every journalist who reports on something. You fucking get the guy who reported on it first fired. And now no one else wants to talk about it.
Yeah, and it's not like he was just some rogue reporter. I'm assuming the New York Times has levels that you go through, you submit it. Somebody, I'm sure a few people had to report it, and then they got that call like, nope. And they're like, all right, well, we ain't approving that anymore. And it might not have even been the government. It could have just been the government had their three biggest advertisers call like, hey,
yeah,
we're going to be pulling our ads if this guy is still employed. You know, that's where the money is in advertisement. Like you said, these big corporations basically control our government, and that's what controls media. If they pull their ads, then that's it. You basically just a zine or some religious magazine a weirdo gave you.
Yeah, you're a fucking podcast on the internet at that point.
Right.
So the other reporter, Alma Guillermo Prieto, wasn't attacked quite as hard for her article, but she thinks it's just because the Times was bigger. So ruining that guy was just going to ruin everyone. That said, the Reagan administration did send a letter to her boss claiming she used to be employed by a communist newspaper in Mexico.
My God.
Just trying to fuck with her. This is a quote from her. The price I paid and that all reporters in El Salvador in those critical and brutal years of the war paid was a loss of confidence in themselves and the besieged feeling of always having it be our word against the State Department. End quote. She also pointed out something that we've already kind of touched on, that the criticism around what was happening in El Salvador eventually stopped being, well, no, there's no evidence of what you're talking about. And it just became, oh, you're a leftist sympathizer if you say what we're doing in El Salvador is wrong. And boy, does that sound familiar.
I was right.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's sounds like a tactic, maybe. This reminds me a lot of the Gary Webb story. Gary Webb is the reporter who broke the story that the CIA essentially started the crack epidemic in the United States. This that we're talking about today, El Mazote, also falls under the umbrella of the Iran-Contra affair. So did them selling crack. That's where that emanates from. And what's really sad about Gary Webb is when that story came out, instead of the New York Times and the LA Times looking into the facts behind his claims, they started attacking him as a reporter and saying stuff like, well, here he says they sold a lot of crack and it wasn't a lot. It's like, okay, so you think it wasn't as the CIA didn't sell as much crack as he said. So now this story is bullshit. It made no sense the way they attacked it, but they attacked him hard enough that to this day, a lot of people think that story was debunked. It wasn't fucking debunked. They just attacked him as a writer.
And the thing is, most white Americans inherently want to believe in the United States as a land of the free and stuff. So they're looking for confirmation bias. It's similar to when you talk to a cult member. I tell people all the time, you can't reason with somebody that based their life off of emotions instead of facts. So, you know, you're not going to out-fact somebody when they're basing their life off of emotions. And that's what happens with a lot of these stories. People aren't really looking for proof. They like, oh, well, see, that company that's been around for 100 years said that. So, it mustn't be true what they said.
Yeah. I think people, for the most part, you know, in their opinions, they're like, well, I believe that. And sort of the six other people that believe exactly what I believe. And I'm not going to look in any deeper than that. I got these six people who are also not very educated. They agree with me as well. So this must be fact. But it's also like people believing that America is, you know, the land of the free, so great. A lot of these people, that's like their identity. And being told something that you've believed your entire life that is like you're in your blood. Most people can't handle that. They would rather deny, call you a liar, say this, you know, make up stuff than to just turn around and face the fact that we're not that free.
Yeah, the mainstream media outlets leaning on government access the way they do is bad for us. It's really bad for us. And it has gone a long way toward fostering this line of thinking where, okay, you said the government did this. Well, the New York Times asked the government and the government said they didn't. So you're a conspiracy theorist now. That is
such a dumb opinion.
That is one of the most effective propaganda campaigns of all time. Because we really have hit that point where even people who, you know, even during the Trump administration, people, you know, who don't trust Donald Trump, just put the word conspiracy in front of anything the government did while Trump was in office. And those same people will be like, that's a conspiracy. But I don't deal in conspiracies. They usually add the word right wing in front of it, no matter what you're talking about. Every conspiracy is a right wing conspiracy. And at some point, we have to get it through our heads that government dissent and questioning the government doesn't make you a conspiracy theorist. Makes you a fucking American. It's what you're supposed to do.
Exactly. That's like what the whole civil rights movement was, questioning the government, or, you know, saying that y'all say these things to be true, but look at how y'all moving, you know?
Yeah. And on top of being disgusting racists and bigots, one of the biggest disappointments about these right wingers that we saw in the 90s who were like, get your guns, the government is coming. They were just waiting for the right fucking government boot to lick, and they found it, and it's Trump. So that was a whole fucking scam too. They were never going to overthrow the government. They just want the right president to fucking worship. It's like,
which is so embarrassing. I've never thought about Trump ever until he became president. You know what I mean? Like, you'd see him on TV, Home Alone. I never thought it's dangerous and it's awful. Don't get me wrong, but it's also kind of embarrassing. But that's your guy, that guy.
Yeah. It's wild.
Poopy Don. What do they call him? Diaper Don. That's
Putin Don.
Oh, he poops his pants. Oh, Putin Don. Yeah, I guess he poops his pants. Putin. He always wears a diaper.
No, I'm trying. Was that Donald Trump? It was some story. I don't think it got too big. Was that him or when somebody else in his cabinet? That's Putin, Ron DeSantis. Some story about he couldn't find a spoon on a plane. He just started eating Putin with his hand like a bear or something.
Yikes.
Where I heard it.
Yeah, you can't be president if you're great. Doing that. That's
a you're like fucking.
I think it was really what this wrong.
Or also, didn't he know the thing that we all learned in grade school? You use the lid as your spoon. Yeah. Why did Ron not use his lid for his pudding? Why did he use his hands?
Probably thought it was gay or something.
Right.
You can't eat at everybody's house. That's yeah. it. Don't you just yuck.
So one of the other things these journalists had working against them is the details of this story sound like movie shit. It sounds incredible. And that was the response a lot of people had was, okay, so you just believed this one witness who told you this thing happened? And they're like, you read where I saw charred skulls and stuff, right? But if anyone out there, I don't know, any right-wingers listening to this are like, I'm still unconvinced. In 1992, when the Salvadoran Civil War finally came to an end, part of the peace treaty involved sending a team of anthropologists to Mazote to exhume bodies and see, was it a shootout between two groups or were these two writers correct? And of course, there was no shootout. Everything they reported happened. The amount of people they said died, died. They exhumed the bodies. They were able to determine how they died. And it was as brutal as described. So all of this shit has been confirmed. And of course, the Salvadoran Minister of Defense informed a truth commission that was eventually set up to investigate that, they had no records of what soldiers from this battalion were involved. So, because this battalion carried on until 1992, it was dissolved when the Civil War ended. And it was one of the most, again, elite and prestigious units within this side of the El Salvador military, which again, we trained them. In 2016, a judge named Jorge Guzman reopened a judicial inquiry into the massacre, which sounds like progress. But as we speak, the country is ruled by a dictator named Nayib Bukele. We actually did an episode of the Unpopular Opinion podcast about him because he calls himself the world's coolest dictator. He really leans into the dictator shit. He was very opposed to reopening this judicial inquiry because he's on the side of the government that did it. He's on the side that that's why we're not mad at them because he's a dictator that is still beholden to us. And so it seemed like this was going to end in maybe some sort of justice. They reopened the inquiry in April 2021. Someone testifies in front of that inquiry and breaks the news that U.S. military advisor Alan Bruce Hazelwood was most likely present when the massacre happened. So it's not just that we trained these motherfuckers. We were there to watch them do this. So they're making progress. And then that inquiry ended when Nayib Bukele issued a law that any judge over the age of 60 had to retire. And the judge looking into this was 61. And they think that's why he wrote that law, was just to end this inquiry. And it put hundreds of people out of work.
The 60 thing, I feel like that's something we can make work over here, even though it was used for evil. We should probably incorporate that in our politics in America.
Yeah, like the reason he did it isn't...
Some people were excited.
Yeah, the reason he did it isn't great, but I was like, I mean, yeah, yes.
You're a little bit too out of touch should be affecting people's lives at 60 years old.
Yeah. It's like when right-wingers are like, defund the FBI. I'm like, yeah, but not for the reasons you want. Like, right. You just want to replace them with a right-wing FBI, probably. So, yeah, I had a bunch of stuff in the notes here about MS-13, but I talked about that up top. But again, this is how MS-13 started. This is a big part of how the immigration crisis in general in this country started, was us going into Latin American countries, either overthrowing their governments or putting down movements that were trying to overthrow the government and making it such a dangerous place to be that people were willing to now send their kids alone on foot to try and make it here. You don't do that if things are mostly chill. It's not Oakland down there. It's not just people are getting their cars broken into. Like, this is fucking real goddamn peril that people are fleeing. And we treat them like they are freeloaders coming to this country because we're so free and rich. And meanwhile, we're all broke and oppressed.
Right. And also we somehow have figured out how to make half of us blame these people that are trying to come over here for a better life. A lot of times I'm very grateful I don't really have parents because all my friends are dealing with their parents who've suddenly have just become very Trumpy liberals their whole life. And I was with my friend's mom the other day. I was helping her with something and I'd met her one other time before this and we'd spent a half hour together and she mentioned the illegals four times. And I was just like, great. So do you want to finish this thing I came over to help you with? Or, and she was just like, well, I'm struggling and they come over here and they're handed everything they need on a silver platter. And I was like, I know you really want to talk about this, but I wouldn't be able to pick you out of a lineup in 2 weeks. So I'm not, but there's a machine that has gotten people to really believe and vote against this when it's simply not true.
That, and it's so many myths about Black people. A lot of states have, before Trump, were voting out affirmative action, but like one of the mass shooters, I can't keep up with him. In his manifesto, he said he was angry that because he heard that Black people get like $75,000 from the government for something. And all of this stuff is like how they voted. What state? I think Harvard has some lawsuit or something because some kid didn't get into college because he thought it was Black people. And they were like, no, man, you didn't get in because all of these legacies got in above you. But yeah, it's been going on forever. And now, you know, immigrants are just a new target. It's America has been able to convince its citizens to blame each other instead of the government for not doing its job.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's some theories on why Martin Luther King was assassinated. He was able to get poor white people and poor Black people to unite and be like, oh, yeah, the government's fucking us. And there's theories on that's why they took him out is because he was actually able to unite people.
Well, I don't think that's a theory. That was what COINTELPRO was about.
That's more what got Fred Hampton killed. He was starting the Rainbow Coalition. The reason they killed Martin Luther King is he was realizing more that socialism, he was going more radical left. One of his last speeches was, I forget the name of it, but you can pull it up on YouTube. He was actually becoming more socialist and getting closer to what Malcolm was teaching. Yeah. And, you know, if you go off of what the media says, Malcolm was just super radical, but it wasn't like that. But yeah, that's why they killed Martin Luther King, because he was getting closer. He said something like, I've led my people into a burning building or something like that. But yeah, man, America is a motherfucker. The way they just manipulate images.
Yeah.
I know people just believe it and they just.
Yeah, it's easier. Ugh. It's easier to just believe the government is good. The government.
Yeah, but I'd rather be mad all the time. You know what I mean?
I mean, like, that's, I'm glad that's I'm mad. The road and I've sad taken for sure.
Ignorant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Jesus. That's the Mazote Massacre. It is a thing that people will never be taken to task for. There, I don't think, is ever going to be any sense of justice when it comes to this, especially now that inquiry that had been going since 2016 is essentially shut down. And that's the Reagan administration. We're doing a bonus episode next week where we're going to go through a bunch of other lesser-known Reagan scandals in a little more rapid-fire succession, because we got a lot to get through. The HUD rigging scandal. That was an interesting one. There's so many. Goddamn.
My God.
I don't think
HUD, is that housing, right?
Yeah.
Or is that, you know, housing, urban development, or something like that?
Yep. That was a bribery scandal where somehow they were allocating HUD money in a way that benefited people who were friendly with the Reagan campaign, which I'm surprised anyone got in trouble for that, because that's the kind of thing, like, diverting money from poor people doesn't usually get you sent to jail. Just ask Brett Favre. There's
right.
Yeah, that guy's.
What's crazy about that, I'll probably bring it up on a local news roundup episode at some point in the future, but someone was finally arrested in the Mississippi welfare fraud thing. And it was the reporter who broke the story because she refused to name her sources when the governor ordered her to. So rest easy, America. There's been an arrest in that.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. That's fucking wild. I love that
the only amendment that we care about is the second one. Because, like, the freedom of the press is a pretty big one, and that's a big thing we're taught, is that press doesn't have to give up their sources to protect sources so they'll report the news.
Unless your right-wing governor wants you to, then you
have to.
Yeah. So that's our episode. We'll have more Reagan shenanigans to come this month. Hopefully it's not all this sad, but probably.
I don't feel like there's going to be any good stuff that Reagan, I don't remember any.
He would have had to do something that was good. I mean, we could talk about that creepy Genesis video where he was a puppet in it. That was fun. Land of Confusion.
No, I don't know what that's about, but I would like to learn more. That seems weird.
The Land of Confusion by Genesis. It was a creepy ass video. So, hey, Kim, John, thank you both for doing the pod. I appreciate
it. Thank you.
What do we have to plug before we get out of here? Because this feels like a great time to plug stuff. AdamToddBrown.substack.com. You can go read my writings. I do a solo podcast called In Broad Daylight that you can listen to there. That's also a video podcast. So there's like pictures that pop up on the screen, things of the like.
Huh.
There's only 3 episodes. It's been fun so far. Go watch it. Give me a reason to keep doing it. And that's it. Kim, what do you got to plug?
It always feels so weird to plug anything after a bummer of a really? Topic. Well, listen to my podcast. Kim Krall, KYMKRAL. Krall Space every Wednesday. I wrote a book, Confessions of a Recovering Party Girl. I'm putting some of my podcast clips on TikTok. So follow me there too, if you'd like.
John, what do you got to plug?
Well, as usual, search my name on YouTube because it's built that way so that people can find me and not the civil rights activist, John Lewis. Because my video essays take so long to write, like 2 to 4 weeks, I just launched a solo podcast that I'm putting on my second channel. But if you follow my main one, you'll see it. It's called Retro Rewind. What I'm doing is going back and listening to albums that are minimum 15 years old, with hindsight to see how well they age, and then pulling up Pitchfork reviews and reading those. I wanted to do the Source reviews, but apparently they didn't archive their reviews. If anyone knows how to find those reviews online, let me know. I searched the Wayback Machine. It's pretty impossible.
Oh, that's crazy.
I dropped 2 episodes on my second one. I did Jay-Z, the Black Album, and then Lupe Fiasco's Food and Liquor. So it's pretty interesting, you know, listening to these albums, just because, especially hip hop, I say it needs 15 years because that's how long it takes the sound to really change. And you can go back and listen to see how things sound with fresh ears. And was it just hot then or is it still hot now?
Yeah, that sounds interesting. People should check that out. And I think that's it. Let's get the fuck out of here. Kim, say goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody.
John, say goodbye.
Stay woke, y'all, but not the new way America bastardized it, the pre-Trump era woke.
Goodbye, everybody. We love you.
People of Earth, your planet is about to be destroyed.